Hi, welcome to Lafayette's Interfaith Podcast, Colton Corner. I'm Lisa Green, Interfaith Fellow, and today I'm so excited to be joined by Dr. Ernest Jeffries, our new VP of Inclusion. Yay, thank you so much for chatting with me today.
You're very welcome.
If you could just tell everybody a little bit about yourself, a little bit about what you do on campus, just as a little intro.
Yeah, well, again, you know, I am the inaugural Vice President of Inclusion here at Lafayette. So that means a whole lot of different things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the things that I am tasked with is to really, really head up the work to make sure that Lafayette is as inclusive in all aspects of the institution as possible. And that means, you know, connecting with people from all across the institution and working together to make sure that all spaces, you know, are inclusive. And, you know, I'm very, very glad to be here. And a little bit more about me. I have had a 33-year career in higher education. Work-wise, that's all I've really ever done. But also with that, you know, I am also, you know, an ordained clergy person that has had about a 26-year run in ministry. And, you know, it's really interesting because people will hear that and they would think that automatically that those two things conflict.
Right.
But they don't. Because I think for me, for me, I look at my job in higher ed as a calling. Mm-hmm. And it's more than just a job or vocation. And for me, you know, as I look at, you know, this work I do as a calling, my calling is informed by my religious tradition and my beliefs.
Wow.
So, you know, to me it's a perfect match because my faith fuels how I approach the work that I do on college campuses. You know, I'm all about, you know, non-judgmental work. I'm all about making safe spaces. I'm all about, you know, accepting people and working with them right where they are. You know, I'm all about, you know, the unconditional love aspect of who I am as a Christian. And all of that, you know, again, it fuels the fire for me to be passionate about equity, to be passionate about never giving up on young people and really, really, you know, getting in there with them to really, really help lead and guide them and support them, you know, through their journeys, you know, which at this particular time in their lives can be difficult in a lot of different ways. But, you know, but when you start looking at a kid that comes, say, to Lafayette and did not come from a very good family situation, you know, being that person that they can gravitate to kind of help them through, you know, the difficulties that they would face, you know, being in a place, you know, like Lafayette, it's really, you know, it's I think it's important work and it's an important place to be. And, you know, I look at my career and I've worked at different types of institutions, you know, the larger public, mid-sized publics, but I found my home at just smaller liberal arts colleges. And, you know, and I've seen, you know, my faith grow at this kind of institutions. Oh. But also, and I say that because it's been an opportunity for my faith to be in action, which, you know, I think when you exercise your faith, it grows.
Sure.
Because, you know, not only is it utilized, but it's also challenged in many ways.
Really?
When you exercise it. And you know, and it gives you, you know, it gives you that, you know, thing, whatever that thing may be, you know, to let you know that, okay, this thing is real, and I am not the same person that I was when I started doing this.
Really?
If that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm curious as to how your faith has changed and been challenged and grown. I guess, do you mean just since you've been at Lafayette or since you've been...
No, since I've been working on, you know, college campuses.
Yeah, I guess where do you think it was, your faith? Where do you think it was 33 years ago versus today?
33 years ago, I was still growing. I was still defining. I was still coming in to my own because, you know, but you got to understand, 33 years ago, I was not clergy. I haven't even gotten into that arena. I knew that there was something different about me. And as I look back on that now, you know, all the older people would always say, you know, it was the calling on your life. And, you know, now with that being said, I kind of knew that it was a calling. I really didn't know enough about that type of thing to really identify. A lot of people used to tell me, and I really, really rebelled against it, ran from it. Because I'm like, no, I'm not doing that. I'm not going down that path. Because I think for me, and to get to something you asked earlier, for as long as I can remember, I've been in a church. You know, my aunt was devout Christian woman. She used to take me when I was younger.
Oh, wow.
And I've always been involved. You know, growing up, you know, all of the kids' activities, you know, and everything else. And then interestingly, as I got older, it was just a part of, natural part of my life. And then, you know, I was also one of those just musically talented kids. And then, you know, as that developed, I always left the space for utilizing my musical talents in the church as well. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, became the place that I was really plugged in as I got older and actually started, I think I was 16 years old when I started playing in church as well as a musician. And then started directing the choir when I was still in high school.
Really?
The younger choir, yeah. And, you know, and when I went to the University of South Carolina as a music major, you know, I did my musical stuff, but then gospel music was always a love. So, you know, so I ended up my very first semester joining the gospel choir on campus and becoming one of the musicians and eventually one of the teachers and directors, you know, throughout, you know, the time. And, you know, and I did, you know, while I was in college, you know, that's the way I kind of got myself through school as well. I went to college on music scholarship, but the local churches, I was always a staff musician at a church while I was in college. And, you know, coming from a single parent household, first generation college student, that helped me survive financially, you know, as well. And you know, church, I am one of those that can say the church really took care of me. You know, I mean, they're not quite a Sunday that went by that I didn't get a meal from somebody.
You know, beautiful.
Always inviting me, you know, and sometimes there was, you know, some ulterior motives trying to matchmake me with a granddaughter.
Oh, that's so funny.
But, you know, but in that, but I can say, though, even with all of that, I think my personal relationship with God wasn't there.
Really?
No, because I didn't. It was more the act and the, you know, and the ritual around just going.
The community.
Yeah.
I mean, that's strong.
Yeah.
I think that's a large part of entering religious spaces, you know? And so what changed for you there?
Well, you know, the old people always used to say, you gotta find it for yourself.
Right.
You gotta know it for yourself. You know, your faith cannot be a carbon copy of your parents or those who had influence in your life.
No.
It has to be an individual thing. And I think for me, I didn't start facing that. Mm. seriously till I left home and got to college and started, you know, coming in contact with a lot of different people. You know, I came up in the Baptist church, but then I started being exposed to people from various denominations that, you know, that had different outlooks about things. And, you know, and then I started kind of, you know, really, really, how do I want to put this? Challenging the things that I saw coming up. Because, you know, one of the things about the church, and I don't know, you know, whether you've noticed this, but there's always people who are there, but that are not really living it out the way they should. And sometimes you see those type of people in various leadership positions in the church. And, you know, and as I started learning more, I started then, you know, looking and really, really challenging. And I'm like, you know, that's not in line with what, and I'm not, and I'll be honest, I kind of lost a lot.
Yeah. Seeing that.
From seeing that and then coming to reconcile those things as not being right.
It felt, you know, disingenuous.
Yeah, it felt like I was betrayed.
Yeah.
You know, in some aspects. But then I looked at that as just more of my own, you know, journey to get to the place where I needed to get to be able to then step into the assignment that I feel that was attached to my calling. And, you know, and it took me, I can say, through college, right before I graduated graduate school, when I came to that place of reconciling all of that stuff. And then really, really was able to commit to my faith on a personal level.
Wow.
And, you know, but then when that happened, then I saw a change in my approach to even the ministries that I was involved in the church. And it took a serious turn for the better.
Really?
Yeah, and I saw my music ministry really take off after that, because I think there was a connection. There was the why that was more clearly defined. There was that commitment from, you know, from me.
So what changed, do you think, to give you that connection from not feeling connected to them?
I think it was just the commitment that I finally made. And I was all in.
Wow.
Because I wasn't all in before.
Right.
And, you know, I think with, you know, God's calling on my life, you have to be all in for things to really click and to come together. And I think I got to a point to where I finally made the commitment for myself.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. So, right, so they always said, you know, you've got to find it for yourself. Mm-hmm. And you did. So was that... That was maybe 6 years, and then you decided you were going to go into ministry.
Well, no.
No.
It was still another, oh gosh, 1, 2, 3, 4. It was still another 4 years after that.
Oh, wow.
Before I started the ministry process.
Yeah. So what was the idea behind, what was the process like in deciding, now I've committed for myself personally, now I want to help other people?
Well, you know, you've heard this word before, a lot of contemplative thought.
Oh.
And a lot of really, you know, getting into scriptures and really getting into, you know, a spiritually based life. And, you know, it came to a point to where there was a pulling and a tugging at me that I could no longer turn my back to. And that I knew then that that the time was right, but more importantly, I was ready.
Right.
Because I respected and revered people in ministry so much that I always walked around with this mentality that I was inadequate to do it. Oh. But it was a fear, but not a scared fear, but more a reverential fear,
right,
of not wanting to disappoint God, not wanting to step into something that I couldn't do it the right way.
Right. I mean, that makes sense. It's, yeah. And I feel like, especially when you're younger and you're watching these older people, you think they have it all figured out.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, perfect beings of God.
And then you see other things.
Right. Right.
You know, that they don't show in the church setting or in the gatherings.
Right. Yeah, you see a more imperfect kind of personal side.
Because, you know, people always say, and I've said this before, it's not about what you do when you're in the gathering.
Sure.
That really defines your faith. It's what you do when you're not there.
Yeah, right, when no one's watching.
Right.
Yeah, I'm curious as to how that connected with your higher ed career and what drove that decision.
Well, you know, it just, again, it became my fuel. It became, you know, in living out my faith, it really, really defined how I approach things. Now, if you ever notice, I don't get too riled about anything. I mean, you know, I'm always, you know, this, I have this calm demeanor because, again, you know, I am really, really steeped in my faith,
right,
that there's always a hope. And there's just this, no matter what you deal with, there's always hope in the God you serve to give you strength to deal with things. And I just don't really, I've never been one to lose it about much of anything, but also I try to, you know, deal with people with respect and the love that, you know, again, that is something that is or and should be a demonstration of who you are in your faith.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense, right? And that calm demeanor, you know, definitely I could see coming from a place of faith. I'm curious, you know, you mentioned your aunt and the church elders. Were there other people in your life growing up who really shaped who you were becoming?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, my mother, you know, other people. You know, there are a lot of people, you know, throughout college, mentors. And the interesting thing is that all of my mentors are people of strong faith.
And you weren't specifically seeking that out?
No, I wasn't seeking
that
out. It just,
that's cool.
Just the way it just happened.
Wow.
You know, and it's really interesting because, you know, everywhere that we've moved over the years when we've been, you know, relocating, it's always been the people in the house of faith that's kind of become our family when we didn't have one. You know, when we were in the Charlotte area for the 22 years, you know, all of my kids, aunties and uncles, they're all, you know, people that we met through the church. And most of them now, it's interesting because most of them are, we were all staff ministers together, younger.
You know,
we were young in our ministerial careers. And all of us are like now pastors.
Wow.
So it was kind of a full circle moment when my daughter got married last summer. Her something blue was, she called it her something blue crew. And it was made up of people who were those people that were spiritual influences in her life. And this was all of her god uncles and aunties. And all of us are ministers. And, you know, there was a time when they were honored in the wedding ceremony to come up and to surround them and to do the prayer, the prayer of consecration for the ceremony.
Sure.
And that was a powerful, you know, testament in, you know, how important those relationships have been, you know, to my children, because we are that way to each other's kids. And, you know, it was a powerful demonstration.
Yeah. God, that sounds like such a beautiful community and just so full of support and love.
And you know, interestingly enough, we're here in Easton.
Yeah.
And we've, you know, just officially affiliated with a church here, and we're starting to find that same thing already. This is becoming our community and our family.
Yeah.
Right here, you know, in Easton.
That's so powerful, right? Because you have something so important to bond over.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wow. That's so cool. And that's amazing that, you know, your kids are carrying on those traditions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Gosh. Well, I'm curious. Yeah. How has it been transitioning to life in Easton?
Oh, I'm loving it.
That's awesome.
There's no secret that where I was before here, I didn't really connect to that area.
Really?
A lot. It was kind of rural. It didn't have a lot of the conveniences that we liked.
And for anybody who doesn't know, where were you right before?
I was in Central Virginia.
Yeah, yeah.
And, it was just challenging in a lot of different ways. So coming here, I mean, this has just been a breath of fresh air, and we've been pretty excited, you know, just about, you know, living, you know, in the Lehigh Valley, you know, just our proximity to the things that we enjoy and the things that we need, and, you know, and even, you know, the finding, you know, of a faith community also that really, really have met what we were looking for. It's been important.
Wow. Yeah. Well, you know, thinking about those things that are the most important to you, I'm reminded of what you were saying earlier of a calling. And to go back to when you were younger, did you always feel like you were destined for this career in higher ed?
No.
No.
Oh, God, no. Now, that being said, I felt that I was going to be in education.
Mm-hmm.
Because I went to college as a music education major.
Oh.
And I finished the music ed degree and was certified in everything. So I was a certified band director.
Wow.
But I did not jump into it right away because I graduated in December.
Oh, so in a couple months.
And so, you know, you don't enter into you know, school teaching until the next fall.
Wow, yeah.
August. So I had lag time there, but also was approached not that far from my graduation about, have you ever thought about working in higher ed? Because I worked in the Dean of Students office
in
student life as a work study student.
Really?
And then my mentor was actually, a couple of mentors worked in student life. And I was very active on our campus. Yeah, I was a band geek, I was a music geek, but I also participated in a lot of other things, unlike a lot of other music majors.
Yeah.
You know, I was involved in the Greek or letter organizations.
Really?
I was involved in, you know, cultural organizations and, you know, in different things. So I had a name throughout student life.
Right.
So I was not just one dimensional. I was very involved on campus. And,
yeah, you're balanced.
And they recruited me.
Wow.
To come in and you know, and I ended up getting a fellowship and an assistantship to get the master's degree for free.
Wow.
And I'm like, well,
it's amazing.
Let me do this.
Because I mean,
and
it's
I'm
free.
Like, why not?
Yeah.
And then I was like, I'll still go teach school. I'll teach high school. But it didn't work out that way.
So then after you got that master's,
I was convinced. Hooked.
Wow. How about
and
that?
And I started my career as a hall director, professional hall director, in Res Life.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
I worked in Res Life. My first job was in Res Life.
How was that?
I learned a lot. And And, you know, I was, anyone that's going to be a dean of students or be, you need that rest life experience.
Sure.
You get a lot that goes, you know, a lot of skills. I mean, you know, you think about what you're doing as a resident slash professional. I mean, you're counseling students, you're doing conduct, you're doing programming, you're doing community development. You get a lot from that. You know, I was doing diversity work, even within that.
Right. Yeah. Wow. Did you do that for a while?
I did it professionally for 2 years.
Wow.
And then I just decided that was it. I didn't want to do it any longer. So then my next job, it was when I officially jumped into the DEI work. Mm-hmm. I was the director. Back then, they called it director of minority affairs.
At
Western Carolina University.
And what was that like?
It was very rural. It was it was a mid-sized university in the North Carolina system, mm-hmm. but it was located in like the most western part of the state of North Carolina in the mountains. Mm-hmm. And it was quite not the area. While the institution was decently diverse at that time, the area was not.
Yeah.
I mean, just to get a haircut, I had to drive an hour and 15 minutes.
Yeah, that's
so can
crazy.
You imagine what the students had to deal with?
Yeah.
So I did things there. I rented booth space in a local beauty shop and a local barber shop, and I would have barbers and beauticians to come in a couple times a week.
Aww.
And I was negotiating with like Walmart and other places to carry like black cosmetics and hair care products. And I was out, you know, doing those kind of things to try to make sure that, you know, that place was livable for minority students.
That's unbelievable. An hour and 15 minutes, right? And, you know, as a student, a lot of times you just can't.
And then it was Asheville. That was the closest city in Asheville.
Oh, no. No, I've been to Asheville. Now, the airport is a shoe.
Asheville is different now, though.
Really?
It's much different now than it was when I lived in that area.
I was going to say, even when I went there, you know, it's such a tiny little place. Yeah.
When the last time you been?
The last time I was there, about two years ago.
Yeah, it is the place, one of the sought-after places, like restaurants and nightlife and things like
really?
That. It's okay. Transformed a lot since we have left that area.
Wow.
Like I said, we left there in 96.
Yeah.
And prior to that, it was not a whole lot there.
Wow. That's so cool that you were able to shape so many people's lives, I'm sure, by bringing things mm-hmm. they wouldn't have been able to get. Wow.
And,
yeah.
And I did some of the same kind of things at Davidson as well.
Sure. Just these things that people, you know, have the privilege to not think about.
Yeah.
That you brought to the forefront.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, wow. Just right, the haircut and the hair product, like things that, yeah, I feel like you're just taking for granted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, people don't think about that, but that's a big deal.
Sure, and that's such a thing for mental health and feeling like you belong, and wow. Yeah, wow, that's amazing. And so I guess it was the most fulfilling part of those jobs, just those relationships.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And then, you know, and it was there, when I worked there, that I actually officially entered into ministry.
Because you were inspired by the work you were already doing.
Yeah, and it was there, the church that we were a part of in Asheville, that's where I did my ministry training and initially officially into the ministry process.
How did it feel to do that training? What was that process?
It was interesting. It was a lot of one-on-one stuff with me and the pastor at that time. And he really took the time and educated me mm-hmm. about a lot of things.
Wow.
And it was a lot of conventional wisdom types of things as well. And interestingly enough, as God would have it, and I definitely say it this way, I actually did my initial sermon, which marks the end of your training process, and you actually get up, you do a sermon. I mean, and then within 2-3 months, we relocated. And so at that time, you know, it was Church of God in Christ is the denomination that I'm part of. Right. And that churches are connectional. So when we moved to the Charlotte area, we affiliated with another church. And little did we know that the pastor of the church we affiliated with in Charlotte came out of that church in Asheville. And we didn't know this. The pastor there had married him and my new pastor and his wife. Aww. My new pastor's wife grew up there. Then, when we were in Knoxville, we were a part of the church where the football player, famous football player that died, Reggie White, was a part of that church. We were a part of that church. And one of the lady who was like the church mother was the sister to the pastor's in Charlotte's mother's mother-in-law.
Wow.
So
they were all connected?
Everywhere we've been, it's been, it was a connection.
Wow.
And it was crazy because, you know, when we were at the church in Charlotte, we got there when the pastor was in the middle of his first year of pastoring. So we got a lot of firsthand experience in helping build and structure a ministry because I did a lot of administrative things and put a lot of the administrative structure in place. You know, I was also the organist and doing a whole lot of things. And my wife and I started several of the ministries that are still functioning today in that church, you know, 28 years later.
Wow.
And then after 8 years, I was then called out to pastor.
Oh, and so what was it like switching from a very, you know, involved community member to pastoring?
Well, let me just say this. I was an over-involved community on the ministerial staff. So I saw a lot of things firsthand. And, you know, it prepared me to be able to hit the ground running.
Right.
Because, you know, many times in the Black church, when you're coming up in the ministry, a lot of people don't sit under someone else's ministry for as long as I did.
Really?
Because a lot of people are like, well, when are you going to pastor your own church? You've been sitting. Da, 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 da. And I'm like, it's not the time.
You wanted to see it. You wanted to feel it out.
But when it was time, I was able to hit the ground running and to go into a not-so-good church situation and really build it from the ground up.
Wow.
Because the church had gone through a split when they voted a pastor out. It was a Baptist congregation, and they vote their pastors in or out. So I went into a situation and had to rebuild from not even maybe barely 50 people.
Wow.
And, you know, I was there for 15 years and, you know, worked diligently to build that ministry up. And when I left, you know, it was several, we had several hundred members.
Wow.
And the church had no debt.
Wow.
We had done a remodel of this facility and several other things, you know, had introduced technology. Mm-hmm. You know, like I said, we had two different TV broadcasts. We were on radio. We were doing things. My approach in ministry, because of where the church was located, it was located in Davidson. Mm-hmm. Small kind of a suburban community that had a history of, you know, pre-civil rights kind of cross. Oh. There were literal tracks there where white people lived on one side of the tracks.
Jeez.
Black people lived on the other. So there's a lot of history there. But, you know, I was involved a lot. And again, by working at the college and being a pastor in the community, I was actually, you know, one to be able to help build a lot of bridges in that community. Mm-hmm. You know, really, really worked a lot with a lot of the different offices of the town. Mm-hmm. You know, I was actually became the police chaplain.
Oh.
After we had some unarmed Black male shootings in Charlotte. I did that to try to make sure that I can help educate people and so we wouldn't have that happen in our community there. And I would, you know, I used to ride with police officers. You know, I had my uniform.
Really?
My badge, everything. As a real chaplain, being a police chaplain is a real, it's a real thing. I was sworn in and everything.
Wow.
But it was good because, you know, if there were situations that in the black community that the police officers needed to go try to, you know, de-escalate, I was able to go with them in many cases to help in that process. As well, but I was doing diversity and work within the police department.
Yeah,
At that time,
were you counseling people one on one and trying to
the officers?
Wow,
I was that person for them.
That's wild.
And I would every Saturday morning I would be there at the police station, 6 a.m. when they had shift change, and they would always have breakfast together at shift change. So I would do that, and then I would ride for at least till noon with that shift every day. And I remember my first official day, I was getting ready to finish my time, and the officer I was riding with was getting ready to drop me back at the police station and got a call. And it was a woman that was jogging in the community, and she collapsed and went into cardiac arrest. Her heart stopped.
Oh.
And it was good that I was there because... Yeah. You know, she was a mother of small kids.
Oh.
And when her husband got the news, he came blazing, and I was able to be there for him while they... Wow. And unfortunately, too, there was someone who was a physician that was running not far on the trail behind.
Oh.
And they shocked her several times and worked on her, and she did not die. We thought we were going to lose her.
But wow. The physician or the original?
The woman that collapsed.
Oh, wow.
So that was on my very first day.
Your very first day. Wow. It's crazy. Well, and it's interesting that you used the word history, you know, talking about it. It sounds like there were still, you know, those tensions that were very present, you know.
Oh, there were some here and there. But I will say that the town worked really hard to try to relieve those things. And, you know, I think it was very important because... there was no real black power base in that community. And so my goal and my aim was that the church would become that. And my approach to ministry was a pre-civil rights type of focus, as when you look at what the black church was pre-civil rights era. It was a lot of things to a lot of people. It was a social program because there was no welfare or anything like that. It was really about connecting and helping.
Taking care of people.
And taking care of people in the community.
Right.
And we did a lot of that, you know, during my time
there. Wow.
And it's kind of set the stage for that church, and they're still doing those kind of things now.
Wow. Right. Mm-hmm. No, that's huge, and you just influenced that so much. And between that and being a police chaplain, I can't imagine.
Yeah, I did a whole lot of things. I sat on committees for the town, hiring committees. I mean,
wow.
Did a lot of stuff. But also that not only benefited the church, but it also benefited Davidson College because I was an agent. I was a dean at the college as well.
Wow.
So it brought that all together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, wow. I don't know how you did it all.
I don't either.
I don't know how you balanced it. I mean, that's blowing my mind.
And before I started pastoring, I actually did a weekend program and did my Master's in Divinity.
Wow. I just, when you're running around doing all these things, that not only is it a lot, it's, you know, a lot logistically, it's a lot, it's got to be a lot physically, emotionally.
Yeah.
It's got a weigh on you. I mean, how...
father. I had small kids when I was in seminary.
Right.
My wife was working, as well. And then I actually did my doctorate while I was pastoring and working and shuttling kids to activities.
Wow.
Everything else.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, how did you find that balance? And how did you...
I had none.
You had none.
It was really, it was interesting because I, it was very important to me to be a present father.
Yeah.
Because I didn't have that in my life. So I was not going to let anything get in the way of that.
Wow.
So what I did, I made sure I didn't do any schoolwork until my my kids were in the bed.
Oh.
So, you know, I didn't want anything taking me away from, or taking away from my time with them.
How many kids do you have?
Two.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so I was burning a lot of midnight oil.
Yeah, I bet, man. Right, so do you ever sleep? I can't imagine. Yeah,
you know, and my lunch breaks at work were a sandwich at the desk, or, you know, running to the library and doing schoolwork during my lunch
hour. Wow. That's amazing. Yeah. I'm curious, you know, about your wife. How did you meet?
Oh, my gosh. We met my last semester in college.
Oh, wow.
And she lived in Columbia, South Carolina, where I went to school, but she went to school in Florence. And I met her on the weekend that my fraternity had its state conference in Hilton Head. She represented one of the other chapters, one of the chapters from her school. Mm-hmm. She was their Miss Black and Gold representative. There was a scholarship beauty pageant that we did. One of the things about our fraternity, it was about, you know, honoring womanhood. So we would have a pageant where the women would come and they would compete, and they were competing for scholarships.
Wow.
And she was one of the contestants. And I actually worked with the shows because I was the resident musician for the shows. I met her that weekend, and one of my fraternity brothers introduced us.
Oh.
And the rest was history.
Wow. How about that?
Yeah.
And how long have you been together now?
They're married 31 years.
Wow.
And dated a couple of years before we got married.
That's amazing.
30, right before I went into higher ed. We started officially dating my first semester in graduate school.
Wow. Well, that's so cool. And I guess that must be a big part of it, you know, that you have your wife as your support system.
Oh, yeah.
For when you're trying to juggle, you know, 10 things at once.
And, you know, and that's what we've been for each other, so.
Yeah.
And you know, and I was fortunate to find, you know, someone like her. Right. Because, you know, my life has not been a difficult one for a spouse to support.
Yeah.
Everybody's not built for ministry, because thing is, it's just not me in ministry, it's the whole family.
Right.
Specifically when you're pastoring, it affects everyone.
Right.
And everyone's on Front Street.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, and she handled it royally.
Wow. Yeah. And your kids too, you know, how were they involved?
In all aspects. but we were very, very conscious though. We didn't want our kids hating the church because they couldn't do anything they wanted to do as young people because of the church. So, yes, they did their activities. They were in sports. They did other things, and we made sure that those things happened.
Right.
Because I had a lot of friends who grew up as PKs, and they hated the church because they couldn't do things because of, you know, their dad was a pastor.
Yeah, and you don't want them to feel like that.
No, I do not.
Yeah, wow.
I did not.
That's so powerful. It's just, you know, you've built up this community where you all support each other, and then you're also using that to go out into the world and do good in both areas. I mean, it's incredible. Yeah. I'm curious as to how you feel about your relationship to pastoring right now.
Well, you know, I'm a staff minister now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think for me, it's just really about being in a place to fulfill my present assignment. And my present assignment is not pastoring right now, but I'm actually doing some other things, you know, with my national church. I am one of the deputy commissioners for education for my international church. So I hold national position in my denomination now.
Wow.
So I'm doing other things now that constitutes ministry a different way, not pulpit ministry. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit different there. The church utilizing me differently.
Sure, but it's still, the same values at your core.
Still ministry.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. That's such an incredible journey you've gone on, through every phase of your life and every different iteration of job. I'm wondering, what are you hoping for the future?
Well, let me just say this. I'm not really hoping for anything. Just wanting to be willing and obedient to whatever the next assignment from God is.
Mm, I love that. Yeah, you're just on the next calling.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Just wanting to be open.
That's so beautiful.
That's it.
That's amazing. Well, that seems like a wonderful place to come to a pause. But is there anything else you'd like to share?
I think I've talked a lot.
That's perfect. Well, thank you so much for opening up and for sharing your wisdom about feeling called and what's motivated you. I love that. I feel so inspired. Thank you.
Thank you.
Awesome. And thank you for listening.